Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I wonder.
And in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah who came to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad. And I bear witness that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad is indeed his last messenger. And I further bear witness that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is our divine reminder, leader, teacher, guide, warner, and comforter in our midst. And it is my distinct honor, privilege, and pleasure to greet all of you once again in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And I just want to thank you. Thank you, my dear brother. Thank you so very much. And I want to welcome everybody back to Young, Gifted, and Black. Of course, we took a hiatus last weekend, so we're back this week. And I'm so honored to have with us tonight a pair of distinguished gentlemen who hail from different parts of the country, but who are very sure knowledgeable and abreast of this subject matter tonight, Black youth and law enforcement. This is something that we definitely need to not only discuss, but certainly address in our individual communities. So before we get started, let me announce that Student Minister Andre Muhammad out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, will be joining us sometime in the broadcast, as well as Brother Kareem Muhammad from St. Louis, Missouri. So right now we're going to start with the guests that we have present. And so I'm going to start with you, Brother Greg 2G Gibson, front and center soldier. Introduce yourself.
Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, I am Greg G2 Gibson. I'm the national chairman for the Black Panther Party Power Movement. Have been in the privileged position of that by the permission of our elders, Bobby Seale and David Hilliard of the original Black Panther Party, founded in its inception since September the 9th of 2007. In dealing with tonight's issue, we stick to our protocol from the 10-point program in dealing with police brutality, as we want an immediate end to police brutality and the murder of Black people and other people of color and all oppressed people inside the United States. We surely believe that this racist and fascist government of the United States uses its domestic enforcement agencies to carry out its program of oppression against Black people and other people of color and poor people inside the United States. And we, the Black Panther Party Power Movement, also believe it is all right, and is also the rights of the citizens of this country, in particular Black and oppressed people, to defend themselves against such armed forces, and that all Black and oppressed people should be armed for self-defense in their homes and in their communities against these fascist police forces. That is our take in terms of what we surely believe is to come in the near future, that being martial law. Now, in terms of what's happening with Stand Your Ground, going back to why we have that point in our 10-point program of point number 7, to be able to defend ourselves, there are different variations of gun laws throughout the country. Some that allow with carrying concealed permit, some that there is no law where one can carry. Now, in terms of being able to defend ourselves as human beings, but in terms of dealing with the loss of life, it seems to justify in that regard for us to be able to prepare sometime in the near future for this oncoming onslaught of overt oppression. We've been dealing with subliminal oppression and for quite some time. We've been dealing with the government, the U.S. government, and in terms of the different various state police agencies and local city police agencies throughout the country, dealing with this, for lack of a better expression, sugar-coated oppression. But now we're beginning to see, and we have been seeing over the past several years, a more overt, outright lash against urban communities, particularly when it comes to black youth and Latino youth. And we, the Black Panther Party Power Movement, take a strong stance in terms of defending ourselves, both not just physically, but legislatively defending ourselves against these rogue police officers who are just basically acting as gang members themselves in uniform and badges. They're just taking our black youth, trumping them up with false police law enforcement charges and killing them, just flat out murdering them for a variety of reasons or for no reason at all. So we truly believe that we have to prepare ourselves, educate ourselves, fight in the city halls legislatively, and ultimately defend ourselves with arms.
Okay.
And that's our stance.
Okay, I just really wanted to introduce myself, but thank you. Thank you for that. And that's interesting to know because that all sounds so familiar to me. Growing up on the West Coast, I remember the Black Panthers in our community, and I remember the 10-point program so very well. And, you know, and of course, us being in the nation, you know, we differ from you, but of course the goal is the same. And so I want to take this time right now to allow Brother Kadeem to introduce himself and tell us a little bit about him. So Brother Kadeem, front and center, so just introduce yourself, brother.
As-salamu alaykum, sister, and family that are listening via internet.
Walaikum salam, sir.
Yes, sir.
Walaikum salam.
I'm Brother Kadeem Amir. Been in the Nation of Islam now going on 18 years. Long student, the most honorable Elijah Muhammad. I have on a few occasions been a student minister / coordinator in various cities, but still working the mission and the cause of the honorable, most honorable Elijah Muhammad and the honorable Louis Farrakhan for the resurrection of our people. And I want to thank you, dear sister, for honoring me and asking me to be a part of the panel, because this discussion is timely. And had we, and if we had been listening to and still studying the time and what must be done, a 48-week lecture series done by the honorable minister Louis Farrakhan, we would know and understand that this subject that we're talking about tonight is certainly timely and it's biblical. So there's a lot that can be said, and I hope and pray that we will say it tonight, and I look forward to bringing something to the table, answering questions, and doing whatever we need to do to make this talk tonight one that we can go home and.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Thank you, Brother Kadeem. And, okay, we've been joined by Student Minister Andre Muhammad. So, Student Minister Andre Muhammad, you want to come down front and center, soldier, and introduce yourself?
As-salamu alaykum. And praise be to
Allah. Alaykum salam, sir.
Yes, ma'am. I thank you, Sister Queen Aziza. I'm not too familiar with everybody that's on the panel. But as of myself, let me begin in the proper way. The name of Allah, the Beneficent. I bear witness to David, Allah, who came to us in the person of Master Farah Muhammad, that great Mahdi, the self-guided one, who saw, looked beyond our faults and saw our needs and came and raised up one in our midst, a black man just like me, you, and everybody that's on the call, to give us an understanding of who we are as a people. And who we need to be what we need to become in order to be successful. And also their extension that is in our midst today, the walking, talking, living, breathing Jesus in our midst, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I want to greet everyone with the universal greetings of peace and paradise. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum
It's been a while since I have been on the panel on the nation building movement, but nevertheless, I'm still family, and I'm always glad and happy to be of service to the nation building movement in any way, form, shape, or fashion. And as the brother has said earlier, I am definitely looking forward to this timely message dealing with the youth, because this is the time that it is necessary for our youth to understand who they are as a people and where they stand in history and how they are so important in history as we speak of right now. So I'm just ready to get started, inshallah.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All praises due to Allah. Thank you, Brother Andre, for showing up. I thought you were going to be late, but you were right on time. Okay. We're going to get started. I want to ask all of you some questions. And before I do that, I want to share some statistics that I was able to pull partially from the Department of Justice and partially from an article that was written by Adam Hudson, who is with, I think he calls it the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And what they do is that they go throughout different black communities in major cities, and they gather data, and they, you know, form this report. But amazingly, 2012, the documented record is not complete for police-involved killings because they have so many that are still lingering and pending of where to actually charge the death, whether it was police-related, whether it was, you know, suicide, or whether, you know, it was a person was a victim of crime, dealing with someone other than the police. Those reports are not finished. But amazingly, 2013 are finished. And so they're reporting that 313 black youth were killed in 2013 by the police. I don't want anyone to get this mixed up with all of them who died of gun violence, but this is just police-involved shootings and killings. 313. 124 of them were between the ages of 22 and 31, and 57 of them were between the ages of 18 and 24. And then I got the statistics on the incarceration and probationary status of black youth. So here we are, 2013, 40%. Of the population of black youth that are under the age of 25 are either incarcerated or on probation, 40%. And we're only, what, 13% of the population. So with those numbers, I'm going to start with you, Brother Kadeem. I mean, what does that say to us as parents, and what does that say to us as a people?
Well, thank you, sister. That says a lot. First, it is written. There are several scriptures, but I must deal with one in particular as it relates to this subject, where it says, kill the male and spare the female. If you look at just listening to the numbers that you've read off, and look at the college campus, look at the corporate structure, look at your community, my community, our community, black men are dead and dying. The college campus is full of black women. And as a result, the enemy is doing his job. He is killing us. And the police, they are like overseers. They are like gatekeepers. It is their job to go in and kill us. How many young black men have gone into prison for speeding violations or gone into a jail, excuse me, for a speeding violation, end up dead? And they'll say he committed suicide, you know? So this is written. It is their desire to kill us. It is by design that they want to kill us. Now, we could say, well, the brothers were in the community serving drugs. You can say that, or the brothers were doing this, or the brothers were doing that. But we have to look at the unseen hand. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us to go to the root of all knowledge. We have to look at the root of the cause of what's going on. It's cause and effect. When you have taken away all opportunity from an entire nation of people, and these people lack the mental capacity to provide for themselves, then on the level of a beast, you just do what you have to do to survive. It's called, that's the language that's used amongst you. We trying to survive. So they are in survival mode. And when you are in survival mode, you like a warrior in the field of beasts. You just, it's me trying to get me. Me trying to do for me. It's me, it's mine. It's a selfish approach. And that behavior is perpetuated in every single, in every major and minor city in America in the black community. Police come in. Some of us, we get so tired of it, we call the police on ourselves because we don't even know what's really going on. Instead of trying to be the peacekeeper in our community, we have people that we call the police in. They want to come. They already there. When you call them, they come quick unless somebody is doing something that is not relevant to them. But if you say a black man is breaking in my house, they're there quick, no limit of time. And their aim and their purpose is to shoot first and talk later. So it's written. They want to destroy us. But we have to, as activists in our communities, Nation of Islam, Black Panther Party, whatever organization that you are a part of, we have to go into our community, but we have to educate our people and let them know this is not the way, this is not what you want, because this is the end result. And if you look at the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, there are people in the nation from every background, gangsters from prison, some educated, some uneducated, all types of background. But we're all tied to one thing, the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And so we have to out after our people with this, because everything else has failed our people. You can take it or let it alone. Church has failed. I grew up in church, so I'm never afraid to talk about church. Church has failed our people. And Islam comes when everything else has failed. And we're the last, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he's the last man standing. Those of us with him, we're the last men and women standing for the betterment and the survival of our people.
Thank you, sister. All praise is due to Allah. Okay. I have someone on the phone who I'm so happy he decided to join us. I didn't think he was coming, but I really do appreciate it. And he only has a few minutes to stay with us, so I want to bring him on, Officer James Smokey Phillips. How are you, my dear brother?
I'm blessed and just trying to maintain the status quo.
Okay, Smokey. Well, come on, introduce yourself right quick, and I want to ask you in particularly some questions by you being in law enforcement, but you're also a black man. So come on, introduce yourself right quick so I can
James, so I'm the captain of field operations for Harris County. I'm on patrol and different functions, patrol and investigations, traffic division and warrant division. So I get a good insight of a lot of stuff in the community because my district is like the district I'm over is probably 42% African American.
Mhm. Okay.
So
and what part of Houston are you over?
Sunnyside, Third Ward area, Hiram Clark, Southwest Houston, Farmington Southwest, and what else we got? Midtown.
Okay.
Parts of
all
Central
right.
Houston, shall I say.
And since we have listeners from all over the country and all over the world, he is from Houston, Texas. Harris County is in Houston, Texas. And Smokey, I want to ask you, the reason why I wanted you on here, and I wish I could have gotten Deputy Shannon Powell, but he had out-of-town emergency. But I wanted to ask you, And since you do patrol the predominantly black communities in Houston, you know, we hear about the police brutality. We hear about excessive force. We hear about misconduct, abuse of authority. We hear about those things, unjustified murder. We hear about those things. But you being a black police officer for many years, and you've been in these communities, what is it that you see that we need to do differently to prevent those things that we are experiencing? Because some of it is racial profiling, no doubt about that. Some of it is excessive force. Some of it is abuse of authority. But what behaviors are we as a people engaging in that will trigger the police to interact with us?
Well, one, I've learned that the police represents society's formal, legitimate means of social control. The police role includes protecting law-abiding citizens from those who are not law-abiding by preserving crime, by preventing crime, and by apprehending likely criminals, precisely how the police fulfill the public expectation and summarize how they view the neighborhood in which we actually patrol. Now, for a young African-American man living in my district or some other district in America that's predominantly black, or shall I say inner city, life may be made even more difficult by police who assume that if they're in a troubled neighborhood, it must be caused by the youngsters. Now, youngsters have, I truly, a lot of youngsters have lost a lot of respect for seniors, elders, and a lot of respect. And from a white policeman standpoint, a black man walking along at night or cruising the neighborhood in a car may be stopped or asked a question. But they also may be subject to what we call a cycle of oppression, as they are sometimes racially profiled, meaning stopped and coerced and arrested without sufficient cause. I think that what I've learned in dealing with some guys, some of the youngsters in my district, is that they sometimes don't know how to keep their mouth shut. You know, I mean, and sometimes they have a lack of respect for authority, and sometimes they just, some youngsters talk themselves into situations. And, you know, they don't know how to be quiet. They don't know how to listen and be quiet and listen to what officers are actually saying. You know, in some communities, especially in African-American communities, you require that you keep identification. Well, you know, that's part of the game out here. You know, Texas is one of those states that requires carry identification. So I just truly believe that, you know, we have to, the youngsters, when I say the younger guys, younger brothers, have to really understand what actual respect means and not disrespect so many of us older or seniors in the community.
Let me ask you this, Smokey. How many people, young people in particularly, have you encountered that are armed? You know, whether they're armed with guns or knives or tasers, whatever. If you could just give me a rough estimate of when your officers who are under your lead, or you yourself, when you're on patrol, how many of those young black, Latino, Native American, whatever, young people are actually carrying weapons and drugs?
Well, right now in Houston, we are experiencing a high amount of aggravated robberies. And some of the aggravated robberies include shootings. This is the most I've ever seen in my career of a lot of youngsters, when I'm meaning 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, involved in aggravated robberies where they actually shoot complainants or shoot people. I've never seen a high like this where they now are carrying more guns than any time before. I don't know, maybe because guns are more accessible now, or the increase of burglaries that happened in my district, where they're actually stealing guns from these homeowners and actually using them on the street. But now is a time in Houston where we're experiencing a lot of aggravated robberies, especially from young African-American men. So, you know, perhaps with good reason, I don't know. I just think that, maybe the economy, the job's not there, kids not wanting to go to school. I mean, it's a lot of things that contribute to it. You know, it starts with education, starts with home life. I mean, there's a lot of factors, social factors that contribute to why they actually doing all these robbing and committing shootings out here.
Wow, that is, that's all I can say to that, Smokey. Okay, so what about the drugs? Because you said that you really kind of attributed to the economy now. So you know that black youth unemployment is what, about 35% in reality nationwide. And so at one point it was drugs. It was the desire to either sell drugs or use drugs or whatever. So now you're saying that is the economy that is causing
this.
But how much
We always joke in the police that the drug gang is drying up because of the feds' acts on drugs, the war against drugs. So just in the time that you get for actually getting caught with drugs, one thing I think that plays a big factor in the kids out here in my district is that we need after-school programs. Chief Bradford is a big proponent. Former Police Chief Bradford, now city council person, is a big proponent for after-school programs. You got a working parent who's working 8 hours a day, say he goes to work at 8, gets off at 5, school lets out at 3 o'clock. So from 3 to 5, these kids have nothing to do. They have no really guidance, no parental guidance, nobody to watch over them. So between those 2 hours, they're just running free. So I talked to Bradford a lot about it. We need to get some after-school programs for these kids, some mentorship programs after school. Get these kids more involved in stuff instead of this mischief stuff that they ain't being involved in. I mean, from 3 to 5 or 3 to 6, they just lose kids. They're running the community. You see them, I ride down the street. I don't work patrolling them, but I ride down the street. I see a bunch of them standing on the corner. And, you know, and there's some good kids out there that could be saved. But I think we have to do a better effort of getting after-school programs for these kids, give them some mentorship programs going on after school. Give them something to do between those two or three hours while their parents at work trying to make a decent living.
Yes, sir. And for all the people who are listening, I know that the Shape Community Center is still open. So if you're looking for an after-school program, go talk to my godfather, Delard Parker, and see if he can help you out because he's still very active in the community. Okay, Smoker, before we let you go, I want to know, for the parents as well as for the youth, when they encounter a police officer, and I know you've done this on this show before, give us the rules that that could possibly guarantee them a safe interaction with the police, so that we can maybe cut down on hearing about these incidents of police-involved shooting.
Well, one thing, in the daytime, keep your hands on your steering wheel. That's the main thing. And when an officer engages with you, don't get any type of argument with them on the side of the road, because ain't no court never been held on the side of the road. If he gives you a citation and you indifferent about the citation, that's what you got your court date. At nighttime, when an officer approach you at nighttime, cause if you have a dome light, cut your dome light on. Keep your hands on top of the steering wheel so they can see them, and always be polite, because I think polite go a long way in some cases with some officers. And like I said, don't get in a debate about a citation, because you have a court date, you have a chance to get a lawyer to help you, go back to the scene and recreate what happened that time when you got the citation. But the main thing, don't become all amenities. Don't make any sudden movements towards your waistband or toward your glove box. You know, just if you got a dome light, cut your dome light on. Keep your hands secure on top of your steering wheel, and tell them, hey, also my hands on top of the steering wheel, because now in some cases these traffic stops are video recorded. So when an officer walks up to you, he actually has a video recording that's recording the traffic stop, and he also has an audio recording attached to his gun belt or in his pocket. So whatever you say is being recorded, whatever you do is being videotaped. So you want to make sure that you're on doing everything possible to keep yourself safe, especially at nighttime in the African-American community when you have a predominantly white officers that's patrolling. You know, you just got to do things and just keep yourself safe. And I got to say, I suggest to people that cut your dome lights on and put your hands on the steering wheel and make statements that if he's videotaping you, he's audiotaping you. And make statements that say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir. Don't engage in any type of debate about what happened. Just accept your citation, get your legal stuff together, get your lawyer, whatever, and go from that point. And just keep in mind that that stop is being videotaped, and what you say is also being audiotaped.
And what about encounters just on the street, though? I mean, like, for instance, what behaviors are our youth engaging in to whereas if you're making a patrol, let's say, down West Belford, and Fondren, you know, let's say you're patrolling, and what is it that you'll see? Because it could be, you know, there are many schools up in that area. There's Welch down there, and Westbury is in the area. And let's say it's just a group of children walking or whatever. I mean, I know it may not be like Stop and Frisk in New York, but what behaviors are you seeing or that you would see that would make you suspicious and want to stop a young man, a young woman, or a group of people on the street?
Well, I mean, from my – when I worked patrol, I never did engage in any type of – if I saw a bunch of youngsters together, it was just a bunch of youngsters together unless they did something overtly to make me think that they were doing something wrong. But for some officers, you know, they just, you know, you see a group of black folks, they're just going to stop them. I mean, that's how it's been in society for years. When I started off in police work in 1982, I mean, some officers stopped black folks just because they were just standing on the corner. I mean, they just had this theory that if black men walking or standing on the corner, they were up to something. And that's not necessarily the case. But they were just victims of a cycle of oppression. They were racially profiled and stopped, of course, and arrested without even such being called. You know, but all I can say is that, you know, when officers engage in juveniles that stand on the corner, don't make any overt movements, you know. I mean, in some cases, put your hands down to your side. If the officer tell you to put your hands up, you know, because you're in a situation where you can't win. If you got officers on the street and they're engaging you and they want to engage in some type of bad conduct, I mean, you can't win on the street. There's no way because the officer's word is going to be what's going to be said.
Okay, and Smokey, you know, you're on Facebook just probably about as much as I am, and we have all these videos that people have shared. You know, they're getting beat up in the jails. They're getting beat up in the police vehicles, you know. And, of course, if you fight back in defense of yourself, because not all police officers are like that. My father was a police officer for over 40 years in Houston. So, but when we do encounter these type of aggressive officers and there is brutality involved, what is the best way, in your opinion, to survive that, and what can you legally do about that situation?
Well, in today's technology, a lot of people carry cell phones. I mean, I remember going to a car one time. We had a black guy who was on some type of narcotic substance, And so we had to get this guy to actually strip down all his clothes naked, and had jumped on top of the truck and was dancing with a small kid. So we had to figure out a way to get this guy out of the truck and not hurt the kid. But as we stood on that scene, probably maybe 30 people came out, and about 15 of them had video phones taping what I actually would be. So it's no quick pro to say, hey, this how you disengage the type of action that these officers may do. But it's always good if you can have a videotape, a phone. That works a lot. You can secretly phone. There's nothing wrong with secretly phone videotaping or audio taping someone who stopped you. I mean, sometimes that may be your best challenge and when something happens on the street, you know? But I don't know. It's just each circumstance has a different way. And I can't say, this may work here and this may work there, because it may not work, because these circumstances are totally different. In a lot of cases, you know, even sometimes when I'm stopped and I'm not my personal car, I activate my phone. And me being a lawman for so many years, I'm generally nice to the officers who stop me. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. And don't give them a reason not to tip him to whatever way he may want to be. But I'm always polite. And in some cases, I mean, some officers ain't polite, but I'm always polite because I understand what he's going through, but getting still, I know that I am African American. He may, you know, and I have a badge. He may find out later. But the point is, I try to be as polite as possible, even though they stop me, and I'm in the criminal justice career. I mean, I'm in the criminal justice job myself, you know.
Mm-hmm. And so, go ahead.
But I just think that for the anonymous black male, it's usually an ambiguous figure who arouses the utmost caution to some white guys. And generally they are considered dangerous until you prove yourself he's not. I mean, most white guys may think that young black kids are dangerous. But there are some who charge, perhaps with good reason, that the police are primary agents of the middle class who are working to make a more hospitable middle class of people at the expense of the lower class. I mean, it's obvious that the police assume whites in the community are at least mid-class and are trustworthy on the streets versus blacks. So, I don't know, it's a lot of things that I can really talk about, but they certainly see their own class neighborhood interests. But it all translates to keeping black kids in their place. That's what I look at.
And so the last question I would have for you, Smokey, is that I know you were at one time, you were president of the, what was it, Harris County Sheriff's Deputies, African American,
I still serve as president. They don't want to kick me out, so I'm still there. So I still serve as president of the union.
Okay. So many major cities have those type of unions for African American officers, because I remember being very young and my father was a member of the Afro American Negro something peace officers back in the day. And right. I remember when String Fellow and all of them came in, my father and my uncle were the only officers that could train them, because, you know, black officers had to train black officers. So they had these unions. And so in these major metropolitan cities, how can the community, the black communities in general, access their African-American departments within the law enforcement to kind of build a better rapport with police officers? Because
yes.
I guess growing up in a police family, you know, I was taught that you're not supposed to fear the police. But then as growing up between Los Angeles and Texas, I mean, hey, You know, it's a different breed of officers out here now. So how can the community bridge that gap between citizens and officers?
Well, with the unions, our job is to protect our officers, okay? And you see that happen all the time down in Texas or down in Houston.
Yes.
I serve as president to protect my members. Good, bad, or that's our job, is to protect our members. Our job is to protect our members to make sure they receive fair promotions, make sure they're not discriminated against, make sure they're not fairly with white officers. We don't interact that much with the community because our job as union officials are to protect our officers' rights, to make sure they're not violated by the department or anyone else.
Okay.
And that's
well,
our job. When we have our lawyers. I mean, that's our job. That's our primary job, a union, like any other union, whether it's the Teamsters Union, whether it's the AFSCAM Union, or Hope Union, or SEIU Union, where our job is to ensure that our members, you know, get job protection, get benefits, good pay, officer's bill of rights. So, you know, we're not more or less engaging in community issues because that's our primary goals, our members.
Okay, so
good, bad,
who do they go to in order to build a better rapport with the police department and especially the African American police? Because I know it'll never be where African-American officers, black officers patrol black neighborhoods. It'll probably never be that nationwide. But even in the community, the police officers need to have a rapport with the citizens. I mean, the citizens, the taxpayers pay your salary. They're not paying you to get beat up, and they're not paying you to be afraid. So how do you bridge that gap?
In each community, there's what they call storefronts. Each storefront have what they call community meetings. It's called PIP meetings.
Mm-hmm.
A way to interact with the police is some, and especially in Houston, Harris County, they have monthly meetings. They have monthly town hall meetings for law enforcement. They have, I know the city of Houston have monthly PIP meetings in each community.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they can get involved with going to the PIP meetings and talking, meeting the officers who work the districts out there, going to the station and, you know, and just talking to the officers who actually work in those beats out there. But the best way, I think, is, and for the city, is to go to the monthly PIP meetings so you can know the officers who actually work your beats.
Sister Queen?
Yes.
If I may.
Yes.
Yeah, brother, the officer, it sounds like when I heard the brother say what their primary responsibility as the union were to the black officers. And I think what you were trying to get to is how can we bridge the gap between the officers and the community. Now, brother mentioned like a PIP meeting. That's obviously
mm-hmm.
something that takes place in Houston. But from experience, I don't know many black people that would just show up at a meeting with some police officers because there have not been great relationships with the police officer and the black community. So what possibly
mm-hmm.
may be able to happen, because there has to be a partnership if there is to be peace, because at the end of the day, I understand the officer wants to go home to his family, while at the same time, nobody in the black community wants to have an unfortunate run-in with the law. So I think that's where leadership has to take place now. There should be a relationship with the police chief and those officers in that community. Maybe a buffer as a black leader in the community have to be the buffer there, because realistically, you're not going to get anybody. Well, let me rephrase. You're not going to get many people that's just going to show up, hey, the police having a meeting in our community, you all need to come. The average person like, no, I'm okay with that. I'm not going there because we're too used to seeing police brutality in the community. There is no trust. There's a lack of trust from the community with respect to police officers. So there have to be a way to build a bridge. And that's what I think, sir, that she's trying to ask, not so much of what your goal is, your primary responsibility is to the police officer, because the officer has a primary responsibility community that he's working
in. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what Smoker was talking about, his position as president of that Afro-American, I think it's Harris County Sheriff's Department, something like that, but I understand that that entity was created at a time where black officers were not being treated equally to white officers, and he was explaining to me that that's what his position was, and that's what, you know, what he does. But in many cities, though, they have what they call, something like a citizens community meeting where he called it TIP.
Mediation services.
Right, but they have those meetings, and a lot of times we don't get involved. And if we don't get involved, then eventually the meetings will cease. But you have a place, your city council, your district leader has a place and a meeting where citizens can go and make complaints or make requests or things of that nature. But that was another part that I was getting to, because when it comes to the politics in our communities, we don't get involved. We don't go to the town hall meeting. We don't go before city council and make a complaint or make a request. You know, we don't politically engage in our communities, and we have no impact on policy. And if you don't have any impact on policy, you don't have any inspiration to change. You're not putting it out there. So I understand what you're saying, Brother Kadeem, but they do have them in most cities, most metropolitan cities, I do know, but we have to get involved.
That's right.
Most of your city councilmen, your district leaders can tell you when those meetings take place. And if you go to one, as big as Houston is, 8 million people, I can go to one on a Wednesday night and I can count the heads in there on one hand. That's just how it is. And that's real. We don't get involved in the political process. Some of us don't even know who our district leaders are. And we'll vote for them because they're black. We vote for them because name familiarity. But we don't hold them accountable for what takes place in our community. So good point, though. I mean, because we really do need to do that. The officers do need to try to build a rapport with us. And I guess it's 50 cents in one hand and 50 cents in the other, because if they feel we're unapproachable and we feel they're unapproachable, nothing gets done. Okay. Smokey, are you going to hang out with us before I go to the rest of my panel, or you have to go?
I have to go at 9 to pick my little girl up.
Okay.
But I appreciate the
opportunity. Well, dear brother, thank you for dropping in. Yes, and next time you're going to have to come when you can stay a little while, because, you know, I have to do these shows like about once a month. So I'm going to be bugging you again probably in another 3 weeks.
Okay, I'll be seated down, Lisa. Right now I'm just moving around trying to talk and move some stuff around as I talk, you know. But I'll be more settled in. Give y'all more insight of what I think about how we can better relationship between the African-American community and the police.
Yes, sir. I look forward to that. Thank you. Thank you, Officer Phillips. And take care.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay. All right. We hadn't heard too much from Brother Greg or Student Minister Andre, and I wanted to take a couple of questions from the audience, and then we're going to get to you too. So area code 702, you have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a comment. I would just like to say this program is very informative. I'm in the city of Las Vegas. My name is Kim Muhammad. And we have something that's called...
Brother Kim.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am. Excellent program. We have a program in our city that where we meet with the officers once a week. It's called the Safe Village Initiative Program. See, they have to come. They have to come. They have to send a representative from the police department to be a part of the community. That's something that the law enforcement has to do. I deal with children in the juvenile justice system, so that's where my bit work of business is. But we have brothers in the Nation of Islam that go once a week, and they meet with the community. One thing that we have to do as members in the Nation of Islam, we have to find the progressive leaders within our community. And we have to go to them and galvanize them and tell them what our position that we want to take. And we must bring those concerns to those meetings and have them be addressed from the active leaders within our community. And then we as members in the Nation of Islam, you as an FOI, you should go and meet the police captain. Let him know who you are. Shake his hand. Because there is a bridge that has to be brought together with the blacks in the community. They trust the FOI. They don't trust the law enforcement. So where the law enforcement can't go, we can go. So they have to, the law enforcement, once we build a rapport with them and a relationship with them, then they have to depend on us. But we have to show a level of consistency in going these meetings. And through us in the city of Las Vegas going through these meetings, that's how we got into the juvenile justice system. I don't want to take a lot of time. I just want to give one statistic, if you don't mind. There is 5.6 million people in jail in America. That is the highest in the history of this country, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. There are 2.2 million blacks that are incarcerated right now today. But I'm going to show you how the juvenile justice system works. They start tracking our children at a very young age. There are 2.2 million children that are in special education who really don't need to be in special education.
They don't have special educational problems.
They have special educational challenges. But what they don't tell us as black people, once your child is in special education, there is a tracking number applied to them. The only reason I know this is because I worked in that system. And once that tracking number is applied to your child, if your child have committed any type of incident of aggression on another child, that information, regardless of you being his parent, is turned over to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So once that information is turned over to them, they know that child. And they deal according to that child in the community from the history of its past. And these are some of the things that we need to engage in by going to these meetings. You're not going to find out by sitting at home. One thing the Supreme Captain told us, he said that we must comply with the law, long as it doesn't conflict with our religion. He said, so we have to get in the community and teach our young boys how to deal with the law enforcement. If he tell you as an FOI to sit on the ground, because if you don't sit down, he's going to put you on the ground one way or the other. So we as a community must galvanize, and it has to take strong leadership in a program like you are giving to us now to galvanize the thoughts of constructive minds to create an atmosphere that's conducive to the nature of God. A good show, sister. I look forward to listening to it later on tonight again.
Thank you, Brother Kim. And Brother Kim and I have that in common because we both work in the juvenile justice system, and not only do they track you through special education, but if you noticed in the last 5 to 6 years or so, now that when your young child, and when I say your young child, I'm talking about your kindergarten child, your first grader, second grader, if they get into an encounter in school, they get a ticket, and that ticket actually starts the criminal record. And, you know, we used to have schoolyard brawls or schoolyard scraps, and it wasn't a political thing, but now it is. It's actually part of a criminal record that follows them throughout their school years and thereafter. So we got to get involved, people. Okay, we're going to take one more question from 301. Area code 301, your mic is now live.
Yes, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Beautiful show, beloved. I was sitting here thinking, a couple of things came to my mind, and I totally agree with the brother Kim that was just on, you know. I thought about this, and these are the two scriptures that came to my mind. Proverbs 22:6, where it tells us to train up our children in the way that they should go. And, you know, when they get old, that they will not depart from it. So I thought about us as members of the Nation of Islam, or just in our own community, start to really police our own communities. I remember growing up in New York,
amen,
and you couldn't do anything in our community. You could not do anything because the neighbors would tell on you. But that's one another thing. And then I thought about this, how the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, when he was doing the time and what must be done, and he was saying that, look, we're not living, you know, this is not prophecy. We're living in that time of prophecy. So the next one was, it says, take up a lament concerning the princes of Israel. So everything that you said, it's all in the scripture, where they're laying hooks, where you talked about the school systems. It's a hook that they use to lure our children in, but also, I'm just going to read a little bit because it's long. It talks about this lioness who raised her cubs up to be very, very strong. And, you know, when the nations heard about them, they came and they trapped them in the pits. So they laid these pits and with hooks, and they took them to the land of Egypt. You know, so we took the prison industrial system, but I'm saying it's all in Scripture. So I think as a people, what we need to be doing, we like the brother said, we just have to get out there, and as far as paying that price to go get our people, there's a price that has to be paid. Well, we were brought up, well, we have to do the same thing. But I think, like the brother said, we got to be visible, and we just got to do what we have to do, because how long will we keep asking other people to do what we need to be doing for ourselves? That's even taking control of our communities, you know, and showing the people. So we say our people don't know how to, well, there was a time when we didn't know it either. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to say that, and beautiful show, beloved. Excuse me for my passion, but this is real. Our children are dying in the streets. Thank you, ma'am.
Yes, I'm sorry. Can you all hear me now?
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And Brother Greg, I wanted to come to you because I know you're with the Black Panther Party Power Movement, and we are, those of us who are gray in the head like I am, may be familiar with the 10-point program, and we understand how that originated and why that originated with the Black Panther Party a long time ago with the under the leadership of Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale. And, of course, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has instructed us that we are not to bear arms under any circumstance. But beyond that point, what about the children? The Black Panther Party power movement involvement in the community with the young men, with the young women, what is going on with that to even prevent any possible negative encounters with law enforcement, if there is anything in place for that?
Certainly. To all the guest audience who just come on, my name is Greg G. T. Gibson. I'm the national chairman for the Black Panther Party Power Movement, founded September 9, 2007, and we have 17 active chapters of the Black Panther Party Power Movement throughout the United States. We have a program, Sister Queen Muhammad, Sister Queen Aziza Muhammad, every Saturday. As a matter of fact, we have one today, and we have it every Saturday from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at our here in the national headquarters of Columbus, Ohio, in the city of Columbus, Ohio. We have a community center It's located on the Near East Side of Columbus, Ohio. And this program is done throughout the other chapters throughout the United States. Every Saturday in any given city that has a chapter of the Black Panther Party of Power Movement, we have a food, shoe, and clothing drive. We also have programs for the youth to do just that, keep them out the streets with inactivity, to bring them in off of the streets to have activity of receiving some knowledge, wisdom, and understanding about the culture, about mannerism, about just basic common sense things being taught to them that will help alleviate the wrong kind of interaction with the police. So to answer your question, yes, we do. We have our, as a matter of fact, it's titled Stop the Violence, Food, Chew, and Clothing Drive. And then we have that from like 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. in one sector of our community, of our Black Panther Party Power Movement Community Center. Then in another room in our community center, we have a black think tank where most of the young adults and adults we get together with. From time to time, we get together with city council members. They actually come to the quote-unquote to the hood and speak with us. And then we also are very proactive in going down to our cells, as Brother Kim Muhammad pointed out. It was a very excellent point. We Black Panthers in the Black Panther Party Power Movement are instructed regularly to go down to City Hall here in Columbus, Ohio on Monday nights, and then the other chapters throughout the United States, whatever nights that the their city council has meetings for the public, we go down there. We find out the issues. We address the issues. And what we really push and for lack of a better expression, preach for the urban community to do is what we are trying to formulate and get in the minds of everyone in the urban community, particularly the black community, is that we need to have our own subdivisions. We need to have our own suburbs or create our own townships within the cities that we live in. See, we're just occupying territory, Sister Queen Aziza. We're living in neighborhoods called black communities, but we don't own the property. We don't control the resources or the funding that goes on in our communities. People outside the communities control that, and they don't look like us. We need to have our own subdivisions. We need to get back to, quote-unquote, Black Wall Street. That is one of the main programs that we push in the Black Panther Party Power Movement. We have four areas of concentration in the Black Panther Party Power Movement. Number one, of course, we want our freedom in our urban communities to do just that, have control of the resources and the politics of our in our community. Number two, we have a strong economic development program. Number three, we push for voting for qualified, and when we say qualified, we mean qualified black and brown politicians who have shown and proven the best interest in mind for the urban communities. And number four, we push reparations. That's the four areas of concentration of the Black Panther Party Power Movement. But overall, what it all boils down to is that we must have control of our own communities. Then we wouldn't have this cognitive dissonance, as beloved Minister Nuri Muhammad always talks about, where we know the truth, we understand the truth, but we don't do anything about it. You know, we need push for and stop lollygagging around and get control of our community. That's the only way we're going to get respect and have something to leave in terms of a legacy for the next generation. What are some of the subdivisions down? I'm sure you live in one of them. You say you live in College Station. Is that a suburb of Houston, Texas?
No, it's not. College Station is just a town all by itself.
All right.
We don't have subdivisions and stuff like that.
Is that a majority black township?
No, it's about 70% white, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
it is.
But
it Well, it's 150 miles from Houston, but in Houston you have places like Stafford, Missouri City, Pearland, and some of those other areas that Smokey mentioned, you know, Sunnyside, Fifth Ward, Third Ward, Fourth Ward, predominantly black areas in Houston, and particularly I lived there for 30 years, so I'm very familiar with that. And
now,
the involvement in the political process is limited. Very limited.
We have to change that. I mean, this is like, this,
yes,
like Sister Ava Muhammad teaches about and preaches about all the time. We can't tarry. With imagine three or four or five or six of those townships that you mentioned being totally controlled by black folk. We got to get on the ball. We our Latino brothers and sisters and our Native African for the motherland, brothers and sisters, they come in here and, you know, they within a year to 3 years, they own certain size of cities here in the United States. And they're not even, they don't even have the ideology of owning, controlling and getting a township or a suburb. They're building up little economic utopias for themselves and sending the money back home to the motherland or sending the money back home to Mexico. We have to get on the ball and control our own realities. If we don't ever start controlling our own townships, we will always be talking about the tragedy of black youth and what the police are doing to them and what we're doing to each other. We have to control our own reality. We have to have our own suburbs, bottom line.
Yes, sir. And I want to go to these gentlemen right quick, Brother Gregory, because I know Brother Kadeem is with us, and I know he said he had to go in an hour. But Brother Kadeem, I want to get back with you, Student Minister Andre, and then Brother Kareem has joined us. I want to talk to you about, as an FOI, you know, you're out there in the community, you know, pushing the paper. What do you see that we need to do to improve how we are approached? What are our children doing? You know, it's really down to parenting. So I want to hear from you, Brother Kadeem. What is it that you see out there?
Yes, ma'am, this is, and I'm going to stay on for the whole show.
I pray to Sutta La.
Yes, ma'am. Consistency is what our people need for months. But we don't have to reinvent the wheel. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us a program and position. And unless we stay the course, the program and the position, we make this a little bit more difficult than it actually needs and should be. All we have to do is keep doing what we're doing. It's going to take, you realize, Master Farad Muhammad told the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and this was the hardest job any man had ever had. So we have to understand if it was hard for him, it's going to be hard for us. And we have to just be patient with our people, but we have to have a program and a position for them. We can't just go talking. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said once, you can go tell the drug dealer, you know the drugs you're selling, killing the community. The drug dealer could turn around to you and say, for $1,000 a day, everybody can die. You see, we have to be able to replace that, show him there's another way.
That's right.
Be able to replace what it is he's making. So we have to offer him, I've heard economic this and economic that. Well, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has had a three-year economic program since the beginning of the Nation of Islam. And now the economic program of Muhammad is reinstituted. Our people don't trust us. That's fine, but there is beyond all shadow of a doubt. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have never stolen so much as a penny from our people. So what we need to do is contribute to that. But money, at the end of the day, is not a really good band-aid for the issue that we're dealing with. Because as the Honorable Louis Farrakhan has said in Study Guide Number 1, we can build suburbs, dear brother, beautiful buildings. But unless we build people, we'll tear down the suburbs. So we're dealing with a mindset. You mentioned
absolutely correct.
You mentioned Hispanic people that come to the country, Africans that come to the country. Well, those people have never been destroyed like the black man and black woman here in America. Those people have not been robbed of their name, their language, their religion, their culture, their God, and have been enslaved for more than 300, nearly 400 years in America, Jim Crow in America, human rights, civil rights in America. Those people have not been destroyed. We still walking around with the enemy's name, and we glorify in that. That's the first sign to know we sick. Something wrong
Willie
with
Lynch
us.
Syndrome. Willie
so
Lynch. Show
if you
me.
Give our people reparations today in our current condition, we'll give it back tomorrow. So money is not the primary solution to our problem. So all we have to do is FOI, MGT, is we just have to be consistent with our people. We can't disappoint our people. If we're out here, we're instructed to do a thing. The Honorable Louis Farrakhan tells us, go out to our community on Monday night. In fact, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said the first thing you do when you go into your city is you don't make converts. You make friends. So when you are a friend in the community, you're a servant in your community. You go out there and the people love you. They trust you. They know you. Now, guess what? You, me, us, we, that person is the buffer for everything we talked about tonight. That person talks to the police chief. That person talks to the mayor. And that person is disseminating information back to the community. And it just can't be that one. Now it's another one and another one. But we got a program in place. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad has a foolproof program. He established it. He proved it before he departed. He established everything that we're talking about that we need, but all we have to do, we don't reinvent the wheel. We just do what we're instructed to do. Be consistent and earn our people's trust. And do not, because it's when you disappoint one of us, everybody on the phone, everybody on the line already know, you disappoint one of us one time, it's a wrap. We're not trusting you again.
Yes, sir. Okay.
I'll pray I just wanted to say, that's the program in place, and mind you, I am a follower of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I go to Muhammad Mosque number 43 here in Columbus, Ohio. My minister is Minister Donnell Muhammad, so I'm with you all the way. And that, in turn, we must build and sustain. We got to have the suburbs. We can maintain the people all that we must. But we must take control of the resources of our community. We got to be in control.
Right.
We can't just occupy the neighborhoods. We got to own the resources and control the politics of our neighborhoods. Otherwise, it's all for naught.
Okay, and let's hear from Brother Student Minister Andre from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Thank you for being so patient, Student Minister. How are you?
Praise be to Allah. I am well, dear sister. Thank you for asking.
Yes, sir. And you know, you're in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm not sure how far that is from Detroit, but I'm pretty sure Grand Rapids has its own challenges with this youth and law enforcement. And what is it that you see out there, Brother Andre?
Well, you know, here in the city of Grand Rapids, we are approximately 2 hours from Detroit, and we're approximately 2 hours from Chicago. So we're like right in the middle of both of these great cities, Mecca and Medina. So we're like in the middle. Grand Rapids is a Republican stronghold. For those who don't know, there's a lot of money here, but it's old. Old money. You have the DeVosses here, the ones who are very, they have a stronghold as far as money is concerned. They're the ones who own the Orlando Magic down in Orlando, Florida. So there are some people here that has money, that has power. There are also the Myers family here, the Myers brothers, the Myers grocery stores. I don't know if a lot of you are familiar with these grocery stores, but they're really big here in Grand Rapids. And I think in some other places in Michigan, too, they're well known. So here in the city of Grand Rapids, you have that particular structure. where the youth are in this city, just as, especially black youth, are in other cities, where when you look at the structure, there's a stronghold in medicine, there's a stronghold in law, there's a stronghold in insurance, science, education, technology, art, culture, and of course trade and commerce, and then you have the biggest one, which is media. And when you have these things that are controlled by those who are in power, that are against us, that are opposed to us, then you have what you call injustice. And when you have injustice, that imbalances society. And you see a lot of that here in the city of Grand Rapids, particularly upon the young black youth. We have designed some programs here to try to deter them from the negativity that we see here in the city. Some of it is you know, going out more than just on Saturdays and the weekend to try and get our youth. We invite them specifically during to our study group classes, and also the Monday night class for the men. And we're also trying to design a class where they are allowed to come out during the week, and we do things together with them. We invite them to come out with us when we're going out into the streets. We don't just keep that for just the FOI. We invite them out along with us as well to give them an idea of what we have to do as men. And it shows them a bit of responsibility. The structure here, like I said, is based around that cornerstone of injustice. And when you have that, then you have an imbalance in the mind. And with that comes along also the imbalance in other places, in education, in arts and culture, because it stagnates them. It makes them look at that as a stumbling block, or something that they can't across or climb over or through or around, or can't get around it. And that's a problem for them. They use the education against them. All of these things that you see on television, as far as it's going on in the country, it goes on here in the city of Grand Rapids as well. And with that, you have that problem. But my particular way of dealing with it is that we teach them who they are. Because if we don't teach them who they are, then we can't expect the enemy to teach them that. That's our responsibility.
Right.
You know,
that's
we
right.
have to do that. We're the ones who are responsible for that. You know, whenever you hear about history and you talk about the Holocaust, most of the Jewish people, they teach their own children about the Holocaust. Nobody else is going to teach them that. They have the power structure over the media. And they also have the money, so they make it so that we have to have sympathy for them Jews as well. So we have to build a way for our youth in order for them to have some kind of respect for us. The minister just tweeted a couple of days ago that our youth are suffering, and it's not necessarily their fault. And the reason why is because we don't have anything in place for them to look forward to once they leave this so-called school system that makes them obsolete, because what they're learning in school is not enough for them to go for themselves. It is only enough for them to go back to the slave master and look for a job. So we as people, when we have the supreme wisdom, when we have what is necessary for us to be successful that Master Farah Muhammad left for us, then we have to make useful that he left with us in the supreme wisdom and make a way for them. There's a saying
that
says, don't raise the dead if you don't have anything for them to do. So
come on now.
If you don't have anything
to
do for them, then what's going to happen? They're going to go back into that, what they call that revolving door, which is the prison system, which is also making money off of our youth. They're designed specifically for our black youth. You don't see the Chinese, and you don't see the Jewish, and you don't see the Caucasians. You don't see their children going to the prison cells. You don't see them going through that revolving door every six months to a year or 2 years. That's because they have something for them to do. Most of the time you see their children, they're in the private schools. Their children are in the schools where they're the design that they give them what they need for their education. They don't have to send their children to the public schools to get what is offered or left on the, or over the crumbs, as it's spoken of in the Bible, the crumbs left by the slave master Lazarus, because that's what they're getting. They're only getting the crumbs that's left over. That's not real education. Because if it was, then it wouldn't, we wouldn't be in the condition that we're in now. So when we look at this and we see all of these things that go on across the country, it's like a revolving door, because we're the ones that's left over. We're the ones that only getting the crumbs. We're the ones that have to rebuild ourselves off of something that has been given to us that was already decrepit from the beginning. So
come on,
that's the problem. That's the problem. We have that problem, and our youth are the ones that are falling because we have failed to, you know, give them what is needed for them to be successful. So the suffering is on them, but it's our fault. And we as people, especially being we conscious, especially if we have the supreme wisdom, especially if we have the man in our midst, Jesus in our midst, who's dying daily to show us the way, what reason do we have not to show them? It is our fault.
I know that's right.
We have to take it upon ourselves, stop making excuses, saying, well, it's the white man. No, it's not. Yes, it's part their fault, but the other part of the fault is the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that he would have us so wise until we won't even know that they exist except that we wrap around our fingers. So that's how smart we have to be. You know, we have to get to that point where we don't look at them as an obstacle. We look at them as an opportunity for us to revolve and put that vernacular back in our minds, to recalibrate our minds to that original nature it had in the beginning, because we didn't have to worry about them in the beginning. It wasn't even, they were not even, that was something that didn't even, that was not a problem for us at that time. The Quran speaks about, he said, it tells us that he wants to get us back to that way of those who were before us. And we can't be talking about the ancestors that were just 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago. We're talking about not even 100 years ago, not even 200 years ago. He's talking about those ancestors that were here before the Caucasian race. That's what he's talking about. That's what the Quran is talking about when it's speaking about that. So we have to get back to those ancestors, those that were before us, who had that mindset then, that we could have then, that mindset that we need now. Because that's the only, we know the operational philosophy of this country or the society is white supremacy. Always has been. So what we have to do is reverse that psychology. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that he was Yaqub in reverse. What does that mean? It tells us that he came to reverse that psychology that Yaqub put us on us in the beginning. He came to reverse that. So if he's the reverser of that, then we have to fall in that same process. We have to reverse ourselves. The Holy Quran says that when it came, they said, this is the book. Surely it is without doubt. So if we don't, if there's no doubt in the book, then there should be no doubt in us. When we look at this particular situation, it's really simple. We just have to reverse the process, especially in our youth, because they're the ones that's going to come up behind us. We have to teach them about their history. Most of them don't even know anything about the transatlantic slave trade. Most of them don't even know that their ancestors before they came to this place were Muslims. They didn't know anything about Christianity. Malcolm X said that, you know, there was no such thing as a Negro until you go past America. There's no history. You don't know anything about the Negro if you go past America, because a Negro wasn't even known then. You didn't know anything about a Negro until they came here. They were the ones that called us Negroes. We wasn't called Negroes before we left Africa. Nobody knew anything about that. So when we start talking about history, you have to get the correct history. Jesus spoke and said, well, the truth shall set you, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. But he didn't say, or did he not specify what type of truth that was? That's the truth that he's talking about, the one that they don't give to us, the one that they keep away from us. Or they'll give you a little something in February called Black History Month. But that little stuff that they give us is not nearly as comprehensive enough to give us an understanding of who we are as a people. That comes beyond. We have to go beyond that. They don't want you to know about the God who blew up the moon. They don't want you to know about Shabazz and what he did. See, they'll keep that part away from you, because that's where the true history starts at. Oh, they're going to keep that away from you.
I agree with you, Brother Andre. I'm sorry, but we really want to stay on topic about the youth and how we deal with the police, because our children are out here dying. And I mean, I understand where you're coming from a scriptural standpoint, and that's very important. But our children, especially the ones that's out there dying, they're as far from God as God is from the devil. And until we get a hold, a grip on them, you know, we're going to lose them. So if we can't communicate with them, we certainly can't get them to go to the mosque and understand the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and understand the teachings of Jesus. We are so far from that, because right now our children are dying. They're going to the grave with no salvation.
Right.
Because they didn't know the God before they depart, you know. And we are, time is moving so fast. And Brother Kareem, are you still with me, dear brother?
As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, sir. Thank you for being so patient. As you see, it's been a busy night already. So, Brother Kareem, from the great city of St. Louis and East St. Louis, and I know he's from all over, but, you know, the blessing is that we have all of you here who are from so many different parts of the country. And if you listen to Student Minister Andre and you listen to Brother Greg and if you listen to Brother Kadeem, no matter where we are, the issue is the same. So, What's going on in St. Louis, Brother Kareem?
Ooh, well, first of all, let me simply say, because the time is short, always in the name of Allah, and that's sufficient. The bottom line is that the same disparity that all my brothers have spoken of, and then also I believe you called him Smokey, the officer was speaking of, this same disparity exists right here in St. Louis, in East St. Louis. Just very quickly, a friend of mine, he's not necessarily, you know, a youth, quote-unquote, in that sense of chronology, but very recently he was attacked by the police. I mean, he's leaving the house to go to the store, and they pulled him over. And I remember the brother was speaking about the camera and, you know, how they're videotaping and all that. Well, that being the case, he actually requested those recordings. And there are no recordings because they turned the doggone camera off. They turned off the surveillance because they knew what they were going to do. They knew where they were going to choke the brother out. It's a common occurrence with this particular police department. You know, so, I mean, those things are there, but at the same time, I would have to say that, like I'm saying, this same disparity, and as you said, our youth are out here dying, and they're dying. Mainly because, excuse my language, but I think you'll understand when I finish saying what I'm saying, they are dying because they have no goddamn example. No consistent example. As the brother said, consistency. I want to share this very quickly because it ties together everything everybody's been talking about. In the book Message to the Black Man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad starts on page 170 and states, it's in the section called Program and Position. I'm going to read it real quick. He said, number one, separate yourselves from the slave master. Two, pool your resources, educational qualifications for independence. Three, stop forcing yourselves into places where you are not wanted. Four, make your own neighborhood a decent place to live. Five, rid yourselves of the lust of wine and drink and learn to love self and your kind before loving others. Six, unite to create a future for yourself. Seven, build your own homes, schools, hospitals, and factories. Eight, do not seek to mix your blood through racial integration. 9, stop buying expensive cars, fine clothes and shoes before being able to live in a fine home. 10, spend your money among yourselves. 11, build an economic system among yourselves. 12, protect your women. Right yes. there, he's everything that we've talked about, everything I've heard, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave us the base for it. What one of the other things we have to do is, okay, when I was coming up, the term was used, you know, you got too many chiefs and no Indians. It's fine to have an idea or a way to apply the methodology. However, we got a base, and we need to stick to that base. And again, that one word, consistency.
Yes.
The youth have to see not just a man. The youth have to see God in person out there every day so that they can gravitate towards God. And then they'll be instructed. They got to have somewhere to go. They got to have something to do. Yes, all of these things. So how do we implement that? Again, we have the programs. We simply have to be consistent at it. See, I can't be a Hollywood reality TV show event. I want to be seen Muslim. I got to live this 100% all the time. Brother made an extremely good point. This is not about converting people to anything. How are you going to convert somebody to something that is their nature? But what I have to do is go into the community and make friends. How do I do that? I don't make friends by selling them the final call. If I really understand what it's about, I'm not selling them the paper anyway. I am providing them with vital information. The money aspect of it is trivial. The real key is, if I am practicing these teachings in my personal life, then I am already setting up. I'm either in my own business or I'm setting up my own business, or there's a group of us coming together and we can provide them with that alternative to selling drugs. We can provide them with another direction to go. But just talking about it is not enough. We do a hell of a lot of talking and very little, and I say we, because I include myself. I'm not going to leave myself out, though I work very hard at this. See, I've got a son, or had a son. Well, I said, no, I got a son, because Allah said those who die in his way, you don't speak of them as being dead. He was murdered a little over a year ago by another young brother over a young sister. And what that did for me was, I've taken that pain and I've channeled it into making sure it doesn't happen to somebody else's son, somebody else's daughter. Like I said, everything I've heard is right on point. The thing is that we got to come together as quote-unquote conscious individuals.
Yes, sir.
And we have to be a living example in the community, wherever we are, of what the youth should be. In other words, we got to be an example, of what a man is. We got to be an example, and we have to be available to them. We can't be aloof. We got to be available. They got to be able to talk to us, and they got to want to talk to us. They got to want to accept the example. I have two companies that I operate, and all the time I got young brothers now, and I thank Allah for that attractive power. They come to me all the time, brother, what you do? And I tell them, well, man, I need a job. I ask them, well, what can you do? I can, or some are honest and say they can't do. I tell them, I tell you what, I give anybody a shot. And I bring them on the job. And even though sometimes it's economically costly to me, I bring them on the job and train them to perform whatever little duty. But the thing is when I see their eyes light up, when I see their face come alive. And here's a youngster that I saw out there just a couple of days ago. He was trying to do his dope thing. Now he's going in a completely different direction.
All praise to Allah.
Again, we have to be, see, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to, because I want to hear more, and I also want, hopefully there are people on the line and in the chat room that have some questions or comments, because, again, we have to all do this. That term or phrase that it takes a village to raise a child, that's not just something to be said, that's real. What Queen Aziza does, what all of you do, it's all of us working together and being that example.
That's right.
We can't just, like I said, we can't just talk it. We have to also be, for example, if they're young, and not if, since there are young single mothers out there, and they got male children, how many of us are making an effort to be available to be a mentor? Okay, fine, we're not their father, but damn, we their uncle. How many of us are making an effort to just be available? Does the sister know that she can call on the brother, not out of no madness, and he'll show up to be there, to be an example to the young boy, to the young man? They want the guidance. They just not going to listen to no punk. Excuse me. They ain't listening to no Rudy Poop. You got to be standing on something. If you can't come from a position of strength, no, they don't want to hear what you got to say. So you have to be able to show them something. Yes, our youth are dying, and we are responsible.
That's right.
Yes, we talk about how the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is the Jesus in our midst. Well, since the scripture ain't yesterday, it's today, what did Jesus say to the disciples? He said, marvel not at the things that I do, for these things ye shall do, and greater things than these shall ye do. So that's now. So if I say I'm following brother, if I say I'm with brother, then that means, if I'm not a little Master Farah Muhammad, then I need to be a little Farrakhan until I grow up. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay.
If someone has their computer on, or if you're on speakerphone, please come off a speaker or mute your computer, because we're getting some feedback. Thank you, Brother Kareem. Okay, listen. I'm going to open up the lines. If you have a question or a comment, please give us some advice, give us some guidance, share your experience, whatever it is. Press one on your dial pad because we want to hear from you. Let's see. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought I had some people. Need to refresh my screen. Oh, God, my screen is locked. But let me go to Jessica's question in the chat room. Jessica says that the police patrol her community all the time, and they look like predators waiting on my children to step off the stoop. They are very young now, but I am very afraid for them. What can I do? Okay. Brother Kadeem, you have an answer for Jessica. Brother Kadeem, are you there?
Yes, ma'am. I apologize. My phone was on mute. She says the police is patrolling her community. Well, she could do one of two things. If she knows a community leader, she can approach her community leader and get them to approach the police. Or she herself can go down to the police station and speak to who's ever there and ask them why are they patrolling the neighborhood, share with them her fears. But at the end of the day,
I don't know what city she's in. I would like to think and hope that there are some FOI that she's familiar with that she can share that with. Because someone said it, we have to. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said it. We have to make our own neighborhood a safe place to live. We can't depend on others to do for us what we need to be doing for ourselves. And in the program position, the last point was protect our women. And if her sister is in fear of the police patrolling in her neighborhood, we need to be on the scene.
Come on.
That's right.
God praise us due to Allah. Okay, let's go to the phones. Area code 702. You have a question or a comment?
Yes, I have a comment. Everything that I have heard is 100% right and exact. We started a program that's called MTI, Manhood Training Initiative. It's a mentoring program that was started by the FOI approximately 5 to 6 years ago. We was a young group of brothers, a need within our community. And from us just being very active in our community and going to police meetings, not even knowing what we're going for, but letting them see our presence. And the more we went, the more we learned. And through that, we have now are in the juvenile justice system. Everything that we do, like the brother said, we have not reinvented the wheel. Everything we do is based around the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Our program is based around the study guide. Self-improvement is the basis for community development. We have young boys from 8 to 18 who are in the program, white, black, Hispanic, and they follow the guidelines of the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. If you look up our program, we are the most effective program in the state of Nevada. We have a 90% graduation rate of young men that come through our program and do not return back to the juvenile justice system. And I close on this note. They did a survey because they found out we were FOI. They did a survey. They said that 80% of men who are in prison that joined the Nation of Islam never returned to prison.
That's
so
right.
Our success rate with our program tells us that the program of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad works 100%. So all we have to do is follow the pattern. There is no our youth are crying out for us. They are looking for guidance. They are feeding our young people all of these chemicals and telling us that they have mental disorders, and they are keeping them in bondage mentally. So about time they get to us, they don't know what to do. So the very first thing that we have to produce in them is confidence. We have to love them, and we have to be on the scene every time they call us. So if anybody wants to know about our program, man, I would love to come to their city and share with them how we got started, the impact that it has on the city of Las Vegas, and we will fly anywhere. It's 8 brothers, and we have been doing this 5 years without any state funding. We just believe in Master Farah Muhammad, and we bear witness that there is no God but Allah. It works.
I'll praise you to Allah. Brother Kim, go ahead and give out either your website or your contact information. We know that you're in Vegas, but since you're willing to travel, go ahead and give that information out pretty quickly so that the listening audience can access you if need be.
Okay. My personal number is 702-785-2772. Our program is called Manhood Training Initiative. If you give me a call, I can direct you to the website, and I can give you a direct number to our local captain who helps facilitate this program. We started this from being in Chicago in a Savior's Day event. And by us being there, we woke up one morning, we said, when we go back to our city, we're going to do something. And we've been doing it ever since, and we have been successful for the last 5 years. So one more time, my number is 702-785-2772, and I'll travel anywhere in the country and help show you how we got started. Thank you, sister.
Yes, sir. All praise is due to Allah. Thank you, Brother Kim. And I have a sister who has a question. She says, just for me. Okay, I guess because I'm the only sister on here. And so
Okay, so she says she's listened to me before and she knows I have sons, and what do I do? Well, if you're a single mother with sons, I don't know if you're in the nation or not, but I'll tell you what I did. Fortunately for me, when my husband and I, my ex-husband and I got divorced, my children were quite grown. They were like 17 and 21. But there was a point in time when we separated, and I think they were like 14 and 10. And, you know, I was like Denzel Washington's mother. I can't watch you and feed you, too. So, you know, you have to have some kind of direction. And, sister, all I can say to you is that if you're a member of the Nation of Islam, trust in Allah, number one. Number two, go find you some FOI and turn them boys over. You can't, it's not even designed by nature for you to raise, especially young men, alone. Children by nature are not to be raised alone. You have to have that balance. So it is natural for us to have mothers and fathers. You have to have that balance. Whether it's a biological parent or not, you have to give a child that balance. That boy child in particularly cannot stay up under your breast nipple and you expect him to be a man. You can't do it. At some point, you're going to have to find some brothers or a brother that you trust and that you can let your young boys in particularly go to and get that guidance and direction. You can teach them respect. You can teach them manners, yes. You can educate them, but you can't show them how to be a man, because if you try to do that, then you're acting other than yourself. So I would suggest to you, dear sister, that to find you some FOI. If there are no programs in your community for after school or whatever, go to your church, go to your mosque, ask them to start one. Listen, it's not hard to do. I know brothers in Houston who started one. They started renting a area in the YMCA, a room where they had meetings twice a week or something like that. I think they may have spent less than $100, and it was four of them, so that was very feasible for them to do. But by the end of the summer, what started out with five young boys or six young boys ended up being over 100 children that they ended up having to leave that area and go somewhere else because the need is there. So sometimes it just takes someone throwing the seed, planting the seed out there, and we have to be involved in our communities. I know that you work. I worked. And I raised my children, but I had to be involved in my community because that is where I lived when I wasn't working. So that's the first thing, y'all. We have to get involved. I know a lot of people say we don't believe in politics, especially us Muslims. You know, we don't dwell in politics and things of that nature, but we do have a responsibility to ourselves in the communities in which we live. And if you do not hold your politicians that you elect or that you're paying with your tax money, whether you elected them or not, if you don't hold them accountable, then you really don't have the patent or the right to ask for anything. Because, see, we want to sit back and complain and talk about politicians, but we do not get involved in our communities. If you have a city councilman, if you have a police chief, you have your right as a United States citizen to sit before them and let them know what's going on in your community, but we don't take time. We don't have time to go to the community meeting. We don't have time. And you wonder why they abuse us in our communities the way they do. It's because we fail to hold them accountable.
Come on.
How dare you elect someone to represent you in your district and you never see them?
They don't know what's going on in your neighborhood. You have a city councilman and your parks are tore up. You have a city councilman and your schools are tore up, but you won't go down to the board meetings with the school district. Same thing with the police. The police are beating up your children, beating up your neighbor's children, being bullies in the community, but you won't go sit before city council and the police chief and say, hey, you know what? On my block, in my community, this is unacceptable. My tax dollars are not paying for brutality. You need to clean this up. You need to make yourself be heard. You can't do it by yourself, but you have to inspire others to work collectively to get it done. We as a people can get it done. But we're so busy being divided and allowing different things to divide us, like our religion, the texture of our hair, you know, the lack of the more melanin in our skin, whatever the differences are. At the end of the day, when they knock your child down and beat his ass, they're not going to ask him, what kind of Muslim are you? They're not going to ask him what church you belong to. They're not going to ask him, is your father light-skinned or is he dark-skinned? They just see that your child is black and they kill them. So all the things that we use to as devices to divide, you need to get past that and unite and to save our babies. If we don't save our babies, you can forget about a tomorrow. It ain't going to be no future. That idea is say ain't. It ain't going to be no future.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's the only way that you kill a people by eradicating the seed. That's the only way you destroy a nation. And that is why this is an all-out attack on our youth right now. You think it's by accident? This is a police action. This is politically driven. They don't have any jobs. They want to close down schools in the black communities because they can't fund them, because they're using their tax dollars to cover everything else that they've already stolen. What do you think they're going to do with your children? One or two things. They're going to either incarcerate them and work them for nothing, or either they're going to kill them because now they're not an asset. Now they're a liability. That's just the way it is. You got more people receiving food stamps. The government, you know they're broke. They won't even pass unemployment. Come on, put the pieces together. They're killing your children because they are now a liability. And if we don't get up and do for self and have some territory of our own and be in the position to run this country, we're going to bury our future. And that's the bottom line. We have to get involved. And it's not our children's fault, nor is it their responsibility. You as a parent, you brought him here, and you want to transfer the responsibility of politics onto them when it's not their issue. The issue is ours, and we are failing them. 313 children last year killed by the police, but 2,700 died by gun violence. That's just in 2013. 40% of our youth, of our black males between the ages of 15 and above, 40% are either incarcerated or on probation. This is our reality. This is our mess. And the brothers talked about respect. The reason why we don't have no respect is because what do they have to respect us for? What have we built for them? What have we left for them? What doors have we opened for them? And please don't tell me nothing about sports and entertainment. But, you know, it's a sad day when you have to go to a funeral. And you look down in that coffin, and the person that you're burying is 12 years old, 9 years old. Are they 7 years old and they got a closed coffin because somebody hit them with a .357 Magnum and the body is too small to handle the impact
of the bullet. So you have a closed coffin funeral. And this is Saturday when the police are so hungry for warfare in the street that they shoot anybody. So your grandmother, who has lived for 90 years, dies of a gunshot wound, and her great-grandbaby, who's 5 years old, is dead because they're chasing after somebody that they say is a drug dealer. And who are we looking for? Or who are we looking to fix this, y'all?
It's on us.
Okay, one more question from the line, and I'm going to let y'all go. Assalamu alaikum. Area code 314.
Well, how are you?
I'm well, Brother G. All praises due to Allah. How are you, dear brother?
Okay, by the grace of Allah, I know we're running out of time. I just wanted to say assalamu alaikum to the panel. And also, what you were saying earlier, it's all by design. You know, listening to the police officer, you know, he mentioned things about, you know, the police rights. But one thing he never mentioned, what about our rights? And these black young men out here, we as black people, we have to understand our rights. But the bottom line is, it's by design. It's all about commerce. And as the Minister Farrakhan be teaching, we need total separation. Total separation. We're in a no-win situation with the United States government and the way that they got this system designed. It is all about commerce. We need total separation. Assalamu alaikum.
Thank you, brother Gene. Thank you. Well, gentlemen, of course, we are out of time and over time.
Yes,
I want to thank you so much, Brother Greg, G2. I always get that mixed up. Is it G2 or 2G?
G2, Queen. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And please, the Black Panther Party movement, I know I said that wrong. It's the Black Panther Party Power Movement. You know,
yes,
thank
ma'am.
You, brother, for your service in our nation, you know, because no matter how we may differ on policy, we understand what you stand for, and of course we respect that, and we have an undying and abundance of love for our brother who has gone on before us, Brother Huey P. Newton, and of course the Honorable Bobby Seale, who I had the pleasure of speaking with the other day. So we thank Allah that he is still amongst us, walking history there. Thank you, Brother Greg. And Brother Kadeem, my dear brother, thank you so very much for joining us for the first time. But you can't be, this cannot be your last time.
I have enjoyed this, and I mean, I'm looking forward to it again. If you don't call me, I'm going to bug you. But I will tune in if I'm not invited. Because, you know, really, you know, we have to think about the priorities. I was going to see the fight tonight. And that's why I was like, you know what, I called my boy. I was like, yo, I'll be late. You know, because there's a bigger fight going on. You know, people are getting this. Tonight's fight, they're getting paid to entertain us. This is a fight that you can't pay me to fight this battle. So thank you, dear sister, for inviting me. And I look forward to the next time. I really do. And I'll communicate with you via Facebook.
Well, you know what, brother? This is Nation Building Network. And at the end of all my shows, I said one nation, one love, and I mean that. So everybody is family. Everybody is welcome at any time. We are here 7 days a week. So, brother, please feel free. And if there's a topic that you just in particularly want to talk about, hit us up in the inbox. I got you. No problem.
I will do.
And, okay.
Thank
and
you,
of
ma'am.
Course, my right-hand man, my backbone of Nation Building, Brother Kareem, Vice President. Thank you, dear brother, for always just bringing it. And I'm going to give a shout-out to my brother Jihad Amos Muhammad down there in Florida. Love you, Black God. I see you out there. So I just wanted to give him the greetings. Okay. Let me give you the lineup right quick before we go. Tomorrow, join us for a very special treat, 6:30 p.m. Brother Jihad, Brother Jamil, I'm sorry, Muhammad, is going to start a series of lectures, and they're going to be called What Must Be Done. And so he's coming out of hiding, so to speak, to come out and teach and help the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan get that message across. And he's going to be sputing out just an abundance of truth and guidance for all of us. So join us tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Him and Student Minister James will be on Trumpet Radio tomorrow. That's another show from Nation Building. It's called Trumpet, the Good News. And on Monday, Brother Kareem, you're going to bless us at 8 p.m. Central with Fall of America. Can't wait to hear that topic. And then on Tuesday at 8 p.m., of course, we have Disaster Preparedness with Brother Rudolph Muhammad and Sister Michelle Muhammad. And on Wednesday, 7 p.m., DJ Black Season and Friends, a hip-hop comedy show. And on Thursday, I will be back right here, 8 o'clock, on Courtship, Out of Control. We talk about videos, pictures, and courting and social media. So, yeah, we gonna knock all that foolishness down. We're going to break it down like a fraction, I promise. And on Friday, we're going to have Student Minister James with our live study group, and he has a special guest. Even I don't even know who it is. So stick around, never know. So study group, 8 p.m., and next Saturday, right back here on Young, Gifted, and Black, we'll have another intriguing topic. I haven't created that show yet, but between me and Brother Kareem, we'll get it done. So thank you again, Brother Greg, Brother Kadeem, Student Minister Andre, who we lost earlier, Officer James Smokey Phillips, and you, Brother Kareem. Thank you all so much, and may Allah continue to bless you in all your endeavors. Original salute to all of you, dear brothers, for your work in the community. So we leave you as we came before you in our nation's greeting words of peace. Assalamu alaikum. One nation, one love. Good night, y'all.
Wa alaikum salam.